Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law.
And obey.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Some terrorist thing just to steal some money out of Congress?
Their arrest was only the beginning.
We are being lied to by
the government. They were innocent. They have no idea what they're up against.
Standing on the edge of some crazy cliff, I have to catch everybody if they start to go over. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 155 of Media Monarchy. It's January 29th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato, and I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We have so much this week. Salinger, Zinn, and the State of the Republic, social political chaos in a one-term president, Emmanuel Goldstein, econo crash updates and Davos death, news purge, rare words, and Louisiana Watergate, plus all the latest from Corber Reports, Peace Revolution, Food World Order, and Cyberspace War. It's all here, January 29th, 2010, episode 155 from MediaMonarchy.com. Like a secret society meeting at the midnight mass. That's brand new music from the Halifax, Nova Scotia band known as Sloan. Brand new music from them from their new Hit and Run EP. And I'm stoked. They're one of my favorite bands. I've loved them for longer than I care to remember. They're coming to Portland very soon. But enough about that. We'll save all that for the next Media Monarchy mixtape episode. But where we are now is January 29th, 2010. This is the 155th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. That's a lot. And I gotta thank the mothership where I'm sitting right now in the HQ. They put me on the air. They let me start doing this. 3.5 years ago. So big thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Blasting out live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And a huge thanks to our awesome affiliates who restream, rebroadcast Media Monarchy. However, the other two biggies, I love it. They blasted out live right now, 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM, all thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com. We're over in the chat room on ZeroPointRadio.com, and of course signed into Messenger and Skype, but we'll get to that. ZeroPoint Radio, of course, carries my man Clyde Lewis, who's back in the big leagues on KUFO here in Portland, Oregon. But the other station that carries Media Monarchy live for you, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, 1 p.m. over on the East Coast. And all the rest, 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, thanks to Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org. 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, thanks to berkeyliberationradio.net. 87.9 in Canton, Georgia, thanks to stickam.com/groundzeroradio. Not to be confused with Clyde Lewis. 90.7 FM, KWMD in Kasilof, Alaska, thanks to oneskyradio.com. My man Glenn at cascadiapublicradio.org. Jeff at radio23.org. That's radio23.org. And also, we're still kicking it in Boulder, Colorado, thanks to the mysterious folks at phantomradio.org. So like I said, we're on Skype and Instant Messenger as we're doing the show. Of course, Media Monarchy is your keyword to all the social network holes. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, MySpace.com/Media Monarchy, Twitter.com/, YouTube.com/, of course, emails, MediaMonarchy@Yahoo or Gmail, and the podcasts and the videos are up on iTunes and archive.org, and of course all the shows, radioforall.net. And again, the best way, I've been trying to repeat this because I think it works the best, feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy. Put that into iTunes. You'll get all the radio shows as well as the videos, The New World Next Week that I do with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Those come sliding down the other side as MP4s, which are ready for your Apple device of choice. Oh, and speaking of New World Next Week, which we'll cover later in the show, I meant to mention last week, and this is, you know, I don't want to toot my own back or pat myself on the horn. I was at my jobby job the other day where I work with the public, and I'm doing my thing, and a couple walks by and they turn around and come back, and the guy, "Are you James Evan Pilato?" Yeah. He's like, "Oh man, I watch your videos with James Corbett." So, Brian and Emily, you're awesome. A little strange to get spotted in public, and that's been the interesting thing about doing videos with James Corbett, is again, I'm used to hiding in the radio and no one exactly knows what I look like, but now it's all out there. But again, we're not afraid. I try not to hide behind, you know, pseudonyms and all that stuff, and folks who do that online, that's up to them. But we're not doing anything illegal here. We're not doing anything we should be ashamed of here. we're data mining and collecting information and trying to spread it to everybody out there who needs it, who's interested in it, who wants it. All the alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, I put them up for you on MediaMonarchy.com. I don't try to make up your mind for you, but we're nonpartisan here. Something ain't right. You know it in your gut. We've got so much to get over, I suppose. So let's dive right in. Let's look at Google News right now on this January 29th morning of 2010. Scott Roeder convicted of murdering abortion doctor George Tiller. A jury in Wichita deliberated for just over a half an hour before finding Scott Roeder guilty. He admitted that he shot George Tiller, who performed late-term abortions at a church last May. If you recall, that swirled around what we still see pop up from time to time in the clusters and the copycats. The mass murder contagion. We were watching all that last spring and summer. Scott Roeder and Poplawski. All the homegrown errorism. The Obamasiah visits Bodymore. And we also have the administration, I believe as the New York Post put it, blinks on the 9/11 trials in New York. I think Bloomberg doesn't want it. But we have a little bit of 9/11 updates to come in the episode. So that's what's happening right now as I come to you on this Friday morning. But our quote at the beginning of the show, standing on the edge of some crazy cliff, I have to catch everybody if they start to go over, of course, comes from The Catcher in the Rye. Catcher in the Rye novelist J.D. Salinger dies aged 91. And I have to admit, he's one of those folks that when you hear that they pass away, you go, oh, I didn't know they were still alive. From Wikinews, American novelist J.D. Salinger, author of The Catcher in the Rye, has died of natural causes at the age of 91. His son confirms that he died in his New Hampshire home. Salinger was born in New York City in 1919. The author had famously remained a recluse since 1953, shortly after the publication of The Catcher in the Rye, his most famous, infamous work. He very rarely entered the public eye after that date, emerging only for infrequent interviews and lawsuits, and he never even responded to fan mail.
One of the most influential and reclusive American writers has died. J.D. Salinger, who penned Catcher in the Rye and introduced America to the angst-ridden teen Holden Caulfield, died Wednesday at his home in New Hampshire. Salinger became an instant sensation with the publication of the book, which is still read and debated and in some cases banned. The work inspired movies from Rebel Without a Cause to The Breakfast Club. Unfortunately, it was also a motivator for Mark David Chapman, who cited the novel as an inspiration for shooting and killing John Lennon. Salinger wrote a number of short story collections and novellas, but nothing as popular as Catcher in the Rye. J.D. Salinger began shutting himself off to the world in the 50s and 60s. He rarely granted interviews, stopped publishing new works, and even refused fan mail. And the bits and pieces of information about him that did emerge were largely unflattering. True to his form, his exact cause of death hasn't been stated. Simply natural causes. J.D. Salinger was 91. Sandy Kozel, The Associated Press.
His magnum opus was published in 1951 and tells the story of Holden Caulfield, an alienated, rebellious 17-year-old, and his expulsion from an exclusive prep school, but is now known as one of the most influential books of the 20th century. Featuring on Time's top 150 books of all time, Time magazine, of course, started by Henry Luce of Skull and Bones, it's been translated into many languages and sold more than 65 million copies worldwide. It was also carried by Mark David Chapman when he gunned down John Lennon on December 8, 1980. Now I add in a little bit of contextual supplemental information for you here. Googling Chapman and Caulfield. And if we hit a link over to Google Books, there's a snippet from Jim Keith's Mind Control, World Control, the late Jim Keith. In 1976, Chapman reportedly ended his job with the YMCA and took a job as a security guard at the insistence of Gene Scott. Chapman moved to Hawaii in 1977 and stayed in the YMC hostel in Honolulu. Chapman also contacted the suicide hotline there and went to the Waikiki Mental Health Clinic. Hawaii has been noted as the location of a mind control assassination training center in the accounts of several intelligence agency defectors. So we know those connections are there. Mark David Chapman is possible Manchurian candidate. Was he even the shooter? Was it the doorman? We do know that he's connected to, I believe, something called World Vision, which is a known CIA connected front, cutout, what have you. So that's all I'm going to say about that. And again, the links are provided. What we try and do here on Media Monarchy is give you the path and get you interested in this stuff. I mean, I'll admit, you know, I'm a little more obsessed than the average person with media. But let's keep moving. Stay on target. The other notable death, going back 2 days to Wednesday, People's History author Howard Zinn, dead at age 87. This from CNN. Noted author and social activist Howard Zinn died of a heart attack Wednesday while traveling, his daughter said. Zinn, author of A People's History of the United States, was 87. People's History, first published in 1980, tells a history not often seen in other books from the perspective of those not in a seat of power. The book was the inspiration for a 2009 documentary narrated by Zinn called The People Speak. I believe that was a History Channel joint. The film highlighted people who spoke up for social change, according to the website, which again, the link is provided to you. Cabot Zinn, that is Zinn's daughter, Myla Cabot-Zinn, the one who announced his passing. She said her father lived a very full and exciting life and that there were many social issues that were very important to him. Above all, she said her father believed that there is no just war. Zinn's death on the day of Obama's first official State of the Union address was underscored by his contribution to a recently released special from The Nation magazine called Obama at One. We've got a clip from Russia today, and I believe that won't be the first time. This isn't our first death we're covering, and this won't be the first clip from, or rather the last clip from, RussiaToday.com. So let's get this clip, and then we'll actually check out what he says about Obama at One, and of course, what are the other unfortunate things that Zinn has said.
Today we are remembering Howard Zinn. He died yesterday at 87 years old. Zinn was a historian, a playwright, and a social activist. Many have called him a hero, even a maverick. He definitely produced a different way of thinking for the world to share in. Joining us now from New York to tell us more about Zinn's life and legacy is RT correspondent Anastasia Chirkina. Anastasia, talk to me a little bit about Howard Zinn and what you think that he will be remembered for.
Well, Christine, this is a man who has been dubbed by some American Mahatma, someone who was a man of limitless depth and philosophy. This is a man who was an activist and historian who made history. This was an author of half a century and one of the most well-known authors of the U.S. left. He, among the things that he will be remembered by, will be his commitment to the struggle for justice, for equality, his activism against injustice. He was always a man who was against against war. He would say that there's no such thing as a good war. He would say that it's only through the struggle and power of the people that real change would be created in the world. He was a man who was very anti-mainstream, very anti-political establishment. He would say that people, the common American, should really not rely on the politicians, should not feed off of what politicians tell them, but really create a struggle from themselves and not be afraid to speak out. This was a man who was committed to protest, who would protest and speak out against all things important, starting from government repression to things like union workers' rights. And one of his most well-known books is A People's History of the United States. And of course, what this book is really a people's history of the country. It's not a history book that talks about what's been happening to the country through the eyes of the political elite. It's a history that is seen from the eyes of a common American. He drew from his own experiences, from the experiences of his people. And this book was really a timeless masterpiece. It was read by millions. It originally intended as a for general readership. This book is and was taught throughout colleges and high schools throughout the United States. So really a very important work that's really been able to impact the minds of generations. But he's also written many more books. He's also written plays, one play on the anarchist Emma Goldman, another play on called Marx in Soho, about Karl Marx returning to modern-day New York and seeing what socialist realities are about nowadays. So really a man of a very deep person and someone who is going to be greatly missed throughout the country.
So, having said all of that, I don't want to dive into any huge accusations of left gatekeeper and all that kind of stuff. At least not right now. But like I said, let's hop over to The Nation. And the last published bit from Howard Zinn, at least, of course, while he was alive, writing about Obama at one, he says, among other things, I've been searching hard for a highlight. The only thing that comes close is some of Obama's rhetoric. I don't see any kind of a highlight in his actions and policies. As far as disappointments, I wasn't terribly disappointed because I didn't expect that much. I think people are dazzled by Obama's rhetoric, and that people ought to begin to understand that Obama is going to be a mediocre president, which means, in our time, a dangerous president. Unless there's some national movement to push him in a better direction. Some of the links and things that are provided, you can see that he has spoken about a lot of what some refer to as conspiracy theories. Operation Ajax in 1953, the CIA overthrow of Mossadegh in Iran. But then we have this, and this is a flashback to November 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. Howard Zinn, don't know, don't care about 9/11 questions. That's the quote. Don't know, don't care. Echoing the sentiments of other left heroes like Noam Chomsky or even Amy Goodman. So again, I provide the links for you. Let's save the discussion for the alternative, for a discussion on the alternative to the alternative. That's all I'll say about that for the moment. Moving forward, we did, of course, mention, and of course, you know, we had the big speech this week. So let's listen to several minutes from what I think is an important speech. And that's, of course, Ron Paul's State of the Union address, State of the Republic address, where the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul warns of coming social and political chaos.
When the dollar crashes, most likely the purchasing power of all currencies, since all currencies hold dollars as a reserve, will go down as well. This means that dollars and other currencies will go into buying consumer items, precious metals, and other physical properties. Consumer prices will soar, as well as interest rates. The central bank will lose control, and the more they inflate, the worse the confidence becomes. The interest rates will respond to these efforts by rising sharply. If the Fed tries to reverse the run on the dollar, interest rates will also soar, and the pain on the American citizens will be of such proportion that political chaos will result. Either scenario leads to political and social chaos, the third event, and the most dangerous. With no ability of the federal government to fund its commitments, international or domestic, major changes will occur in our system. The social unrest will elicit cries for government to exert unusual force to head off a complete breakdown of law and order. The ultimate trap will be set for a system of government claiming to protect a free society. If more power and police authority are not given to the federal government, it will be argued that only anarchy will result. If more government policing power is given, it will mean a lethal threat to civil liberties. Already, we have permitted the notion that a single person, the Attorney General or the President, can decide who is an enemy combatant, thus denying that individual the right of habeas corpus, permitting indefinite detentions without charges made. This attitude towards civil liberties has changed significantly since the fear built around 9/11. Yes, I know, declaring one an enemy combatant is reserved only for the radical Muslims engaged in terrorism against the United States. To be reassured by this reasoning is quite dangerous and naive. Logic should not lead us to equate suspects with terrorists and include American citizens. And yet, this has already been set by precedent. Under difficult circumstances, our political leaders will not be hesitant to use these powers to maintain order. Tragically, the people may even demand it. We are rapidly moving toward a dangerous time in our history. Society as we know it is vulnerable to political and social unrest. This impending crisis comes as a consequence of our flawed foreign and domestic economic policies, a silly notion about money, ignorance about central banking, and ignoring the onerous power and mischief of out-of-control intelligence agencies. Our unsustainable welfare state and a willingness to sacrifice privacy and civil liberties in an attempt to achieve safety and security from an inept government. Dangerous times indeed. What can be done about it? Must we wait for the inevitable and expect to restore our liberties in a street fight against the overwhelming power of the state? Not a good option. The only way that we can prevent blood from running in the streets is to offer a better idea of the proper role of government in a society that desires first and foremost liberty. And that is impossible without a firm commitment by our thought leaders to the ideas of freedom. The source of all creative energy and prosperity, an all-powerful state is the threat to that idea. The prevailing attitude of the people, as it once was in early America, must be that of liberty and self-reliance, rather than the nanny state and dependency. Rely on the government force to mold all private choices. If this is understood, a smooth, although not painless, transition to a free society is achievable. Ignoring this option will be very destructive to everything that is dear to the hearts of most Americans. What is it that we must do? We must immediately embark on balance the budget by reducing spending, change our foreign policy so to that of non-intervention, a full audit and more supervision of the Federal Reserve, leading to abolishing the Federal Reserve, legalize competition to the Federal Reserve with competing currencies, regain respect for civil liberties and privacy while reining in the CIA, wean ourselves off the dependence of wealth transfers by government, abolish crony capitalism, no subsidies, no bailouts, no regulatory or tax privileges to protect the powerful elite, especially the military-industrial complex. Eliminate the income tax, the inheritance tax, and taxes on savings and dividends. None of this can happen without the restoration of Congress to its dominant position of the three branches of government, as was originally intended by the Constitution. The executive and the judicial must be reined in, and Congress must assert its prerogative over all legislation curtailing all unconstitutional agenda through budgetary control. Signs abound that angry Americans are now more ready than ever before for a change in direction that is indeed real. If this program were improvised, even suddenly and dramatically, the adjustment, though significant and to a degree somewhat painful, would be much shorter and of minor consequence compared to the chaos and poverty that will result if we refuse to change our gluttonous appetite for a free lunch.
Texas Congressman Ron Paul delivered a riveting State of the Republic address on his Campaign for Liberty website, orating his thoughts on where the U.S. stands as a nation and what the future holds. Paul warns that if the country continues along the course it's on, we will witness a three-stage slide into social and political chaos, beginning with the current financial crisis, a coming dollar crisis, and culminating in mass unrest. The full speech, the transcript, available, campaignforliberty.com. So this is posted up under warnings of social political chaos and how to fire Bernanke. This was posted up Monday, January 25th, and as an addendum, I have a couple bits from Webster Tarpley, tarpley.net, mobilize now to oust Bernanke as Fed chair. However, it ended up not happening, and we'll get to the reappointment of Helicopter Ben in just a few minutes. So that was my little joke there about that being the important speech of the week that everyone should have watched. Can you imagine, actually, stop for a moment and think of folks watching that all across America, all across the world, instead of what they watched Wednesday night with the Obamasiah? I also noted, because I did, I checked in on the stream and watched a little bit of the speech and tried to point out to folks over on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy a place to annoy your friends and family with uncomfortable news. I told people, hey, check out those things hanging up on the wall back behind him. See those bundles of sticks with the axe head? Now look at this Nazi stamp that has, gosh, it has the exact same symbolism on it. But anyway, let's get to a little bit of Obamasiah. And we're all over the place in this episode. We have so much to go over. It might not all flow in the perfect form, but again, if you're only listening to the show and not checking out MediaMonarchy.com, you're missing out on a lot. Obama would rather be a really good one-term president.
Ever in the middle of all this coming at you, think maybe one term is enough?
You know, I would say that the one thing I'm clear about is that I'd rather be a really good one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. And I believe that. There's a tendency in Washington to think that our job description of elected officials is to get reelected. That's not our job description. Our job description is to solve problems and to help people. And you know, that's not just the view of elected officials themselves. That's also the filter through which the media reads things. Maybe the reason I can say this with confidence is I've gone through this before. I went through this through the campaign. When your poll numbers drop, you're an idiot. When your poll numbers are high, you're a genius. If my poll numbers are low, then I'm cool and cerebral and cold and detached. If my poll numbers are high, boy, he's calm and reasoned. Right? So that's the filter through which a lot of this stuff is interpreted.
So Obama greeted ABC World News anchor and Council on Foreign Relations member Diane Sawyer with a kiss to begin their interview on Monday. This, I guess, sort of being the Barbara Walters before the Oscars version of CFR before the State of the Union. But an awkward moment soon followed when Sawyer asked the president if the job was ever so difficult that he would consider not running for a second term. I'd rather be a really good one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. And I agree with him. There is an anonymous comment on this posting. It's a shame he's been such a mediocre one-term president so far. Anyway, at this point in history, we might as well do away with the facade of presidents and admit the government is run by and for corporations. Interesting related story here from Cleveland.com. Obama has suspicious number of letter-writing fans named Ellie Light. And if you check out this article, you'll see that it has been discovered that all around the country, showing up in op-ed slots and letters to the editor sections of local and regional newspapers, are a bunch of pro-Obamasiah letters, all signed by someone named Ellie Light, all with the different addresses in all the different states, like they live in all those states. Sometimes the posts and the stories transition better than I think that they will. You know, I come from college radio back east, so I'm a good programmer. That's been one of my good skills. I can make good playlists and film lists and apparently news lists. So speaking of imaginary people, Emmanuel Goldstein releases a new Osama to Obama audio tape. So from the Big Brother Corporation, BBC, Bin Laden tape, with quotes around it, Bin Laden, warns Obama of more attacks. A tape said to be from al-Qaeda leader Emmanuel Goldstein, Tim Osman, OSS man, Osama bin Laden. He's warned Obama there will be more attacks if the U.S. continues to support Israel. In the newly released audio tape aired on Al Jazeera, bin Laden says the U.S. will never live in peace until there's peace in Palestine. The authenticity of the audio tape has not been verified. The message claims Al-Qaeda was behind the December 25th attempt to blow up a passenger plane bound for the U.S. The voice recording says that the message is from Osama to Obama. Now, we return to RussiaToday.com with a quick clip with Wayne Madsen asking the musical question, where in the world is Osama bin Laden?
Osama bin Laden, is he dead or alive? Over the weekend, an audio tape was released in which the Al-Qaeda leader praised the attempted Christmas Day bombing on a U.S. airliner. This new tape has led many to believe that bin Laden is indeed alive, but as with many Al-Qaeda tapes, its authenticity has its skeptics. Joining me now, one of those skeptics, investigative reporter and RT contributor, Wayne Madsen. Wayne, I want to thank you for being here in our studios. Now, you're saying that you believe that Osama bin Laden is not alive, that it's not his voice on those tapes. Why do you think that, and where are you getting your evidence?
Well, many in the intelligence community doubt the authenticity of this particular audio tape, because these tapes, both audio and some videotapes, are often found on these jihadist websites. We don't know who starts these websites. Anyone can start a website. But in many cases, it's a group called the Search for International Terrorist Entities site, an operation that's been linked to the Israeli intelligence service. So we don't know if this tape is authentic. And many people in the intelligence community also believe, until the full analysis is done, that this may not, in fact, be bin Laden's voice on this particular audio tape.
But do you think that he's still alive?
Well, we know from the late Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, she actually said in a televised interview that she doubted that he was alive, because she said something about him being assassinated. Now, there was some recouping of that.
Who would have been assassinated by, if not the United States?
Well, I think she indicated it was by somebody close to him in his entourage. But the thing with these various claims, there was a videotape also released last year where it was a bin Laden. It almost looked like a cardboard cutout figure of what we see here in Washington. You can get your picture taken with President Obama, the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and only the lips were moving. And a lot of people looked at that and said, that looks a little bit strange as well. So this search for international terrorist entities sounds a lot like the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And you might actually discover an extraterrestrial before you'll discover bin Laden right now, because many people, also in the Middle East, believe he died. Where he died is up to question. Was it in Afghanistan, or did he manage to get back to Yemen, his ancestral homeland, and did he die eventually of kidney failure?
Among all the great things that Wayne Madsen points out there, I'd never thought that site, of course, the website that brings us all these suspicious videos, is just an anagram of the acronym of SETI, of the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. But that's the key thing here. SITE and Intel Center, the folks who bring us these videos, have connections to intelligence agencies. So again, ask yourself, folks who harass middle school girls on MySpace or text each other nudie pics of each other get picked up and arrested with the quickness, but somehow the most wanted terrorists in the world, we just can't find their IP. So tying in with all this, with the threataganda being raised, it's amazing how it goes day by day and week by week. It sort of builds up, and then it'll kind of cool off a little bit, and we'll talk about Avatar and other bullshit, and then it'll kind of get to... UK terror threat raised to severe. This from The Guardian. The threat of international terrorism to the UK was raised from substantial to the second highest level of severe, meaning an attack is highly likely. Alan Johnson, Home Secretary, said there was no intelligence to suggest an attack was imminent. The escalation reversed a decision in July to downgrade the likelihood of a terror attack from severe to substantial. Johnson said the change was not specifically linked to the increased threat from international terrorism following the failed Detroit plane bombing on Christmas Day or to any other incident. But just this morning, that's not all. I think the Al-Qaeda, Al-CIA recording studio, you know, they'll work on some stuff for a while and then they have a flurry. So, again, this morning, Bin Laden rebukes U.S. on climate change. You gotta love this. From the New York Times, Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, blamed the United States and developed countries for not halting climate change and said that the global economy should immediately abandon its reliance on the American dollar, according to an audio tape released Friday by the broadcaster Al Jazeera. Talk about climate change is not an ideological luxury, but a reality, Mr. bin Laden was quoted as saying in a report on Al Jazeera's English language website. All of the industrialized countries, especially the big ones, bear responsibility for the global warming crisis. The authenticity of the tape could not be immediately confirmed, and Al Jazeera, which is based in Qatar, did not say how it had obtained the message. Osama bin Laden, eco-warrior. That's one of the extra links to The Guardian, and we have more from Reuters on all the hot new singles from OBL. Dig it. We laugh to sometimes stop ourselves from crying, and again, what seems maybe so rote to myself and to regular listeners of Media Monarchy and shows like it and shows better than it. It's a staged shell game. So much of what we see are the shadows cast on the wall in the cave. But let's keep moving. And try and get more serious. So, OBL was talking about dumping the dollar. So, let's move to the EconoCrash updates. Taxes, axes, boom, and busts. First, a local story. But it got national coverage. So, we'll grab it from the New York Times. Oregon voters approve tax hike for corporations and rich families. Amid recession, high unemployment, and tight household budgets, voters in Oregon have agreed to raise taxes on people with higher incomes to pay for public education and social services. One of only five states with no sales tax, which is awesome, by the way. Oregon has long kept its corporate taxes relatively low. A statewide cap limits how much property taxes can rise, and before Tuesday, voters had not approved a statewide income tax increase in nearly 80 years. Each of the two tax proposals, measures 66 and 67, won decisively, in part because of support from large labor unions and because of how the taxes are directed. And I could see it everywhere I went. The mobilization was behind 66 and 67. We have a really well-made video. The song is a little long, so I don't have time to play it for you here, but I implore you to check out Fear the Boom and Bust. It's a parody. Not a parody. But it features two noted dead economists, Hayek and Keynes, and they're having a little battle rap about the boom and bust cycle. So that was brought to my attention over on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. And you can get the full video over on Econ Stories, YouTube.com/Econ Stories, Fear the Boom and Bust. But again, more seriously now, all the other ugly EconoCrash updates. A frightening op-ed from Kitco.com. Financial folks who know what they're talking about. America's impending master class dictatorship. Hey, that kind of sounds like super class. Vatican bank charged with money laundering. What a surprise. That's from Press TV. 5 bank failures bring the year's total to 9. That story is a week old, of course. FDIC Friday is coined, I believe, by Cryptogon.com. So I'm usually a week behind telling you about the bank failures because I don't really see it while I'm doing the show live. But that's from the Wall Street Journal. FDIC chief thief Sheila Bair received Bank of America mortgages while working on Bank of America bailout. Another great piece from allgov.com. Sam's Club cuts 11,200 jobs, 10% of their workforce. Verizon to cut 13,000 jobs as businesses reduce lines. Record number of young Americans jobless. That's from Reuters. 28% of Orlando area rental apartments, condos, and townhouses vacant. That's from the Orlando Sentinel. And if we hit up Bloomberg and head over to Manhattan, Tishman to hand over New York City's Stuyvesant town to its lenders. I'm close to folks who actually live in that place. It, I believe, is the largest private, you know, living facility in the country. It's massive. It's now official. The Dems have pushed the new debt ceiling to $14.3 trillion. We're not in debt. We just changed the term of what debt means. That's from ZeroHedge.com. South Carolina Lieutenant Governor Bauer basically said the needy owe something back for the aid that they got. But of course, it is the welfare state. And then they like to blame the victim. But Bauer also said something about feeding stray animals. Treasury Department to investigate Geithner about AIG bailout. Again, from allgov.com. Again, things don't look so good for some of the gangsters and banksters that are running the EconoCrash and the new financial world order. But again, a lot of these guys that we see that are on stage and are up in the ring on Saturday nights for Friday night's main event, WrestleMania, these guys are all expendable. They're the front men to push agendas, and they're the shadows on the wall. It looks like they're fighting. It looks like they're against something. Gosh, the agenda sure seems to roll forward. So there's a lot to go into there, and I haven't fully investigated it myself. Treasury Department to investigate Geithner about AIG bailout. I'm sure we'll hit something about that here in just a minute again. A little update. Game over for the American middle class. That's from MyBudget360.com. Another fantastic entry in his Economics 101 series. CorbettReport.com talking to noted author, economist, researcher F. William Ingdahl, talking about money and political power. Ingdahl.oilgeopolitics.net. And again, all those links are provided for you. So the update, like I said, regardless of Webster Tarpley trying to get us active, Senate confirms Bernanke for second term as chief of the private illegal Federal Reserve.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke has been confirmed for a second term to head the nation's central bank. The 70-30 vote came after hours of debate in which critics argued that Bernanke did not detect the coming crisis and failed to rein in the banking industry.
Prior to the recent financial crisis, as a member of the Board of Governors, Dr. Bernanke advocated monetary policies that contributed to excessive risk-taking.
But his supporters argue that once the crisis was in full bloom, he used aggressive and creative measures to bring stability to the financial system.
And he has kept a steady hand on the tiller in a perfect economic storm that has threatened this nation's underlying financial stability.
Wall Street has been rooting for Bernanke's confirmation. Stocks plunged last week amid news of mounting opposition, but then recovered when his prospects brightened. The confirmation fight and the attacks on the Fed have become a test of central bank independence. The Fed jealously guards its autonomy as a crucial element for carrying out monetary policy, even if it's not popular with politicians. Mark Hamrick, the Associated Press, Washington.
We don't have time to get into a full expose of the Federal Reserve. But they noted, oh, his prospects look dim until the White House sort of unprecedentedly last Saturday came out with a press release saying, oh, Bernanke's coming back. Senator Richard Shelby, Repug from Alabama, did say that Bernanke fiddled while our markets burned. It's also worth noting that no Fed chairman has ever been rejected by the Senate. Even Paul Adolf Volcker in 1983 was confirmed for a second term by a vote of 84-16. And so Bernanke got in again, this time thanks to 70-30. So that amazing Bloomberg piece that we mentioned isn't, of course, probably going to run in the newspaper. It's a commentary by David Riley. Secret banking cabal emerges from AIG shadows. The idea of secret banking cabals that control the country and global economy are a given among conspiracy theorists who stockpile ammo, bottled water, and peanut butter. After this week's congressional hearing into the bailout of American International Group Incorporated, you have to wonder if those folks are crazy after all. Wednesday's hearing described a secretive group deploying billions of dollars to favored banks operating with little oversight by the public or elected officials. We're talking about the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, whose role is the most influential part of the Federal Reserve system, apart from the matter of AIG's bailout, deserves further congressional scrutiny. If you've done any kind of research into this, you know that all these guys have always been connected, and they've all pretty much been set up by multi-generational serial killer families. So whether it's the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers or the Fed or the New York Fed or Goldman Sachs or Deutsche Bank or Merrill Lynch or AIG, they all go back to intelligence connections. Secret banking cabal emerges from AIG shadows. Well, I'll feel, you know, so much better now that they're at least saying, you know, maybe we're not crazy after all. Maybe we're not crazy after all. We're just, you know, reading their documents and things that they never thought we would read. Staying on the econo crash precipice, if you will. This is the first story that James and I covered on the latest New World Next Week video, which again is always available. You'll always see the most recent one at the top right of MediaMonarchy.com. The World Economic Forum in Davos kicked off Wednesday, the 27th. However, Davos security head found dead day before Economic Forum. Again, from the Big Brother Corporation, BBC, the police commander in charge of security at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, that's D-A-V-O-S, was found dead in his hotel room. Marcus Reinhardt, 61, had been head of police in the Swiss canton of Graubünden since 1984. All indications point to a suicide, local police said in a statement. Police Captain Marcus Suter will take over security operations in Davos, where the five-day forum started on Wednesday. Some 2,500 business and political leaders from around the world are expected to attend. A brief mention of some of the contextual supplemental links provided for you. You can go to the World Economic Forum's website, Google search Davos 2010, more from Wall Street Journal, nowpublic.com, New York Times, bio and search information on Marcus Reinhardt. And the thing that I note is during the previous puppet administration, the war whores, there was a lot of suspicious deaths surrounding the military-industrial complex, of course, whether it's CIA agents, you know, being randomly beaten to death on a Sunday morning jog by people in a white van, or all the guys involved in the rogue B-52 flight from Minot Air Force Base, or any of those things. Now that we've moved into the latest scam, and it's been said that the last scam pulled by malicious misleaders is to loot everybody, now that we're into the new financial world order, it sure seems like a lot of dead CEOs are popping up, flying out of windows, having heart attacks. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Let's now move to the latest massive news purge on MediaMonarchy.com. This one's called 128 News Purge, like a secret society meeting at the midnight mass, which was, of course, our intro song from Sloan. I suppose I should mention that I've been doing a lot more of these news purges as I try and get back up to speed on running not only MediaMonarchy.com, but CyberspaceWar.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. And all the other editing and research. And oh yeah, you know, life and love and all that stuff too. It's all a little much. And I try and do my best for you. And it stresses me out sometimes. And it's difficult. I mean, I don't think I probably have to tell you that. So, having said that, let's jump into this latest news purge. And start off with an interesting clip. We'll start off with drug war updates. Cheech and Chong get fair and balanced on Fox News.
And this classic comedic couple back together again with a new tour called Get It Legal. Joining us now, Richard Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
So many people,
thanks,
of course,
for having us on.
Oh, you're welcome. So many people, of course, remember the hysterical moments in those movies. But now you guys, you're acting then, kind of. And now you're actually living out this thing because you're starting a tour called Get It Legal Comedy Tour. What's the message you're trying to send to folks?
We want to get pot accessible, legal, you know, get people out of jail, you know, get the cancer patients treated and people with MS. You know, pot can do a lot medically for people.
Yeah, we want to make beer illegal. Was a trade.
Okay, I get it. But here's the thing, on a real serious note, New Jersey, the last thing that Governor Corzine did before he left office was he signed into law making it legal, at least for medical marijuana in the state of New Jersey. It's the 14th state now. I know that you advocate this. You think that that's important for people who are suffering and you feel this is a good way to help them. But your message is actually more, you actually want to legalize pot for everyone, don't you?
Well, no, we want to legalize pot for everyone that wants to smoke it. You know, we don't want to legalize it for Republicans. We just want to legalize it for people that really want to smoke it.
Well,
you
know,
you don't
fair,
have to
it?
Smoke it. You
I mean,
know,
being fair and balanced,
too, so.
If you want to legalize it, shouldn't you want to legalize it for everyone?
I want to legalize for everybody, but of age. But I want to make beer illegal.
I get your message this morning. All right, so when you have this comedy tour, I know this was a long time coming, because Cheech, I think you were on our show saying that possibly the two of you would reunite together. How tough was it to convince Tommy to go out on the road with you?
No, it wasn't that tough. You know, we kind of came to the point in our lives where we go, if we're going to do anything, we better do it now, you know, because time's wasting here.
Yeah, it works perfect for my lifestyle. You know, I wasn't in jail, so I was available.
He was on a work release program.
Well, Tommy, I wasn't going to mention it, but you did actually go to jail. You spent 9 months there for selling drug paraphernalia, so you do have some experience.
Yeah.
No doubt the reason why you want marijuana to be legalized, right?
Yes, because right now I'm a felon for shipping a bong across the state line.
Yeah.
And you know, as a felon, there's a lot of things I can't do.
He can't vote for corrupt politicians.
Well,
seriously, it has medical value. And it also, you got look at me, I'm 71 years old. I'm in the best health ever, and I smoke constantly. So to keep my health that way.
All right, well, we'll leave it up to all the parents watching potentially with their kids out there, whatever the message is here.
We don't want kids to smoke it.
Well, I'm not sure.
You have to be 35.
You have to be 35, okay.
35 is the cutoff
age. The rules keep changing, apparently, according to you guys. Get It Legal Comedy Tour kicks off next week. Cheech and Chan, thanks so much for being our guests.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, dear.
Get It Legal.
That was interesting.
It was interesting, and you know it's got to be pretty demeaning to go on Fox News and deal with those kind of hosts, but you got to give it to Cheech and Chong there, actually, for hitting a lot of important points. The idiocy of the alcohol society. No offense, I enjoy beer myself. But making beer illegal, making pot legal, of course being convicted and not being able to vote for those corrupt crooked politicians. So, a great clip. And again, folks, we're going down the ugly news purge. All your news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups here. And I should tell you, we're now into hour number two of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 155th episode. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. It's January 29th, 2010, and coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, frolympia.org, berkeleyliberationradio.net, and on and on and on. And all the other fine affiliates, I thank you. I love you. So, speaking of radio stations, the first bit we're going to hit on the geopolitics tip is from my man Clyde Lewis. Of course, we noted last week, he's blasting out on tens of thousands of watts all over the Portland metro area and beyond on KUFO-FM. Of course, you can also then get those episodes from CascadiaPublicRadio.org and ZeroPointRadio.com, streaming them out for you. Clyde Lewis, his most recent episode was about what he termed the Norwegian woodpecker, although he didn't coin that term. But essentially, what this goes into, ultimately, are the questions surrounding Haiti in particular and weather weapons in general. So we'll note from his article on groundzeromedia.org/Norwegian-woodpecker, in 1976, as the U.S. was celebrating its bicentennial year, the U.S. intelligence was monitoring radar and electromagnetic signals from the Soviet Union. What had their attention was a pulsing signal that was being sent at 3.26 and 17.54 megahertz. The pulsing signal modulated at a rate several times a second, resembling the sound of a woodpecker. It was soon traced to an enormous transmitter array near Kiev in the Ukraine. Within a year of its discovery, people in Canada, Washington State, and Oregon were complaining of all kinds of maladies. Eugene, Oregon suffered the most. People complained of pressure, headaches, anxiety, fatigue, insomnia, lack of coordination, and numbness, accompanied by a high-pitched ringing in the ears. No one had really thought of the possibility that strong electromagnetic microwave radiation could have caused these symptoms. However, residents between Eugene and Corvallis, Oregon, were being subjected to a powerful radio attack with a signal centering at 4.75 megahertz. Again, this goes into Tesla, Navy, ELF, communication systems, and of course, HAARP. Clyde Lewis GroundZeroMedia.org breaks it down, the Norwegian woodpecker. Again, it's all there for you to research. What connects this, so maybe those conspiracy theory people aren't crazy. Let's get the flashback from IsraelNationalNews.com. Israel makes waves by simulating an earthquake. This goes back to August 25th, 2009, way back to then. Running drills with weather weapons. So we'll now get into the latest ugly headlines from the Haitian situation from Cryptogon.com. Children disappearing from hospitals in Haiti. We have noted there are more slaves in the world now more than ever before. There are articles about human trafficking, being able to buy a baby for $30 in Haiti. We've mentioned the warnings and accusations from activists saying, watch out for organ thieves in Haiti. So again, these things are there. The private intelligence groups and military contractors that our hijacked government does business with have been busted for human trafficking, sex slaves. Don Cora Halliburton sex slave scandal won't go away. Google that. But on down the list, a history of intervention, occupation, and resistance in Haiti. An article from Andrew Flood over on anarchism.com. But the blue helmets are opening fire and pepper spray on hungry Haitians. That's from the Daily Mail. Radio Free Haiti on the ground and in the skies. A somewhat positive note on the power of media by way of Danger Room. The World Health Organization plans to give Haitians a controversial jab or two. More on that from theflucase.com. And a couple other notes on geopolitics. Finland to host their largest ever military exercise this coming September with their good buddies the U.S. and Germany. The last note on geopolitics by way of Raw Story and the French agency press, U.S. military involved in Yemen operations. They told you they were. They just needed a catastrophic catalyzing event to get you behind it. We give you Mutalab. You know, the underwear bomber, Christmas time bomber. We've got a nice update exposing the scam coming up in a little bit. But let's get the history mystery headlines. Details of the death of Dr. David Kelly, UK scientist, to be sealed for 70 years. We've got reports from Daily Mail and AllGov.com on concealing vital information. The Dr. Kelly postmortem to be kept secret for 70 years. Just another case of convenient deaths. Canada's former ambassador to Iran was a CIA spy. Big surprise there. But thanks to the ChronicleHerald.ca for exposing yet another intel op. Oliver Stone says Adolf Hitler was enabled by Western bankers. And guess what? He's right. He was. Another fascinating note from the Wall Street Journal. And again, that's what's interesting in the controlled media world. And again, that's what we're doing here. We're data mining for you. Rupert Murdoch owns the Wall Street Journal. Rupert Murdoch owns ridiculous Fox News. He owns Sky News across the pond. So he can tailor his message to whatever particular social political winds are blowing in whatever social political situation. By way of Washington's blog, we note an amazing must-read article by Edward J. Epstein over on Wall Street Journal. The anthrax attacks remain unsolved. The investigation of the 2001 anthrax attacks ended, as far as the public knew, on July 29, 2008, with the death of Bruce Ivins, senior biodefense researcher at USAMRID in Fort Detrick, Maryland. Cause of death was an overdose of Tylenol. No autopsy was performed, and there was no suicide note. Less than a week after his apparent suicide, FBI declared Ivins to have been the sole perpetrator of the 2001 lone gunman anthrax attacks. The FBI's six-year investigation was the largest inquest in its history, involving 9,000 interviews, 6,000 subpoenas, and the examination of tens of thousands of photocopiers, typewriters, computers, and mailboxes. Yet, it failed to find a shred of evidence that identified the anthrax killer or even a witness to the mailings. Sort of reminds me of Bin Laden and no mention of 9/11 on his most wanted poster. They make the bust huge, and you never smell the end of their hubris. Of hooray, we made another big bust, and it's in huge fonts on all the headlines, terror plot busted. And what spills out in the weeks and months, and unfortunately sometimes years and decades later, is that it was a fraud. But again, like Alan Dulles said, the American people don't read. On to the media and the memes. You got to subscribe to tons of feeds to get the kind of news that I put together for you here on MediaMonarchy.com. It's always good to subscribe to some of the news of the weird or, you know, unusual feeds from websites. ClickToHouston.com sometimes has a good one, and they do in this case. Alleged car thief arrested while playing Grand Theft Auto. That one's worthy of the Onion. Judge says Roman Polanski won't be sentenced in absentia. That's from the Washington Times. And again, as we've been tracking the Polanski situation, I always refer you back to the amazing interview I did last year with author Peter Lavenda on sinister forces and Roman Polanski and the Manson family and the occult and the media. An amazing poll. We're getting the article from The Guardian. I'm not sure who ran the poll, but Fox News is the most trusted news channel in the U.S., poll shows. And again, it shows how the pendulum swings back and forth. One party's in favor, one party's out of favor. One controlled opposition is energized and in your face and believable and active, and the other one goes to sleep. Avatar replaces Titanic in record books. Seems to happen very often now. But, of course, James Cameron beats his own record with another bloated tale. And no, I haven't seen it yet. And no, I probably won't because I'm a contrarian bastard that if everybody says you got to do something, I'm not going to do it. The last note on the media memes from Oklahoma.watchdog.org. A new law would keep the FCC off LPFM. That's low power radio, folks. Many communities have passed laws saying, yes, we can have low power radio. We want it. Thought the airwaves were ours. Pump up the volume, indeed. That law, actually, in Oklahoma, is being forwarded by Charles Key, who's done a lot of work in exposing the official story of OKC. Couple notes on murder and mayhem. Tanker explodes on New York Highway. More on that from the Washington Times. And another William Bennett update. I made an oblique reference earlier to ex-CIA guys being randomly beaten to death while they're on a Sunday morning jog. Now, supposedly, one of the guys has pled guilty to this gang assault. So I suppose that wraps up the strange situation of ex-CIA agent William Bennett. But now we're back to the Obamasiah, the Prince of Peace Prize. The criminal cabinet, all the apostles of war. Let's run down the headlines and cap it off with a return to Russia today. But from the top, we do have a link by way of Christian Science Monitor to the full transcript of Obama's State of the Union speech. There it all is in black and white. And again, it's not like it's any big surprise. They pretty much release it the days before so everybody can know what's going to be in it. And most of the articles are already written ahead of time. Yeah, they'll do some tweaking at the last minute, do a little teleprompter fix, but, you know, it's staged. It's scripted. Obama does criticize the unelected folks known as the Supreme Court, who sometimes appoint presidents, on their latest decision. That is, of course, quite important, and we noted it last week, I believe. That would be the one giving corporations the right to spend whatever they want in campaigns. And if you follow that to its conclusion, most corporations are multinational, so you could have foreign corporations pretty much funding and installing puppets. So Mussolini said that, you know, fascism should really be called corporatism. It's when the corporations take over the state. And we suppose that communism is when the state takes over the corporations. But you can argue pretty effectively that the end result is the same. Crooksandliars.com noting Manchurian candidates again asking the question, does SCOTUS still think it can't happen here? It can't happen here. It's not fascism when we do it. Bruised Obama's new rallying cry, jobs, not healthcare. Oh, let's see if you guys like this show. That's from The Guardian. Obama commits to climate change bill, again from The Guardian. However, returning to Christian Science Monitor, Obama and the myth of job creation. I believe we've hit that before. They don't really create jobs. They struggle to actually just keep jobs from disappearing. And a birther note. We haven't had one of these in a while, but video by way of raw story, raw replay. Representative Hayworth talking to Tweety Matthews says Obama should come forward with the birth certificate. Hacker breaks into 49 House websites and insults Obama right around the time of the big vaunted speech. Obama gets an F for world leadership. Article from Niall Gardner over on the Telegraph. Obama strives to revive the spirit of 2009. That's from Los Angeles Times. So that's a pretty good rundown of just some of the mainline mainstream reportage surrounding the vaunted State of the Union address that, again, remember they vowed wouldn't coincide with the, you know, the season finale premiere of Lost. But let's close out the Obamasiya updates with a bit from Gerald Celente of Trends Research on what the Obama speech really was, and that was a pep rally.
State of the Union address is drawing lots of attention, with some calling it a comeback for U.S. President Barack Obama. From the economy to the Supreme Court justice, he plowed right through all those issues that we've been talking about. Here to weigh in on Obama's speech is Gerald Celente from the Trends Research Institute. Hey there, Mr. Celente. Let's talk first about some of those things the president said last night about the economy. He admitted that he hated, and he used that word hated, bailing out the banks, but it had to be done. What's your reaction to this?
Well, why did they have to bail out the big guys? You know, what they do is on one side of his mouth, he says how much he hates it, and on the other side, the banks are laughing all the way to the bank. And what did they do today? They just reappointed the biggest banker in the world, Ben Bernanke, who made it all possible. So it's just to appease the people, to make it seem like, oh, they're really getting tough on these guys, while, as I said, they're laughing all the way to the bank.
But Mr. Celente, what the president said, and it's hard to dispute this, is that if he hadn't have bailed out the big guys, more businesses would have been lost. Fewer loans would be given than they have been. What's your response to this?
Oh, few loans are being given already. The loans aren't going out there. And look who they bailed out, AIG. Nobody knew what an AIG was in September of 2008, Bear Stearns, you know, just a brokerage firm, the Merrill Lynch mob. You know, come on, it's one after another. They just keep saying this over and over again until people believe it. You know, it's the old Hitler story. You tell the lie over and over again until the lie becomes the truth. There is absolutely no evidence that if any of these financial firms failed, the world would have collapsed. What would have happened is that capitalism would have worked the way it was supposed to, and that meant that the healthy banks, the smaller banks, the commercial banks, the banks that didn't gamble would have picked up the slack.
All right, well, let's stay on this topic of money. And you were mentioning before Ben Bernanke, the Fed chair. Right now, the Senate hearing, the decision on whether or not to reconfirm him for a second term is going on right now. Why do you say that this is a bad idea?
Well, he's the guy, I mean, how could people be so irresponsible and to keep being put in the same positions to act more irresponsibly? And this all happened under Bernanke. Look, go back to Bernanke, 2007, November. He's talking, telling Congress there is no recession in sight. In December, they officially say we're in a recession. He's been off on everything. He's no genius. All they keep saying is, well, you know, he's a great mind of the Great Depression. He knows all about it. And that's like me saying I know how to fix Model T Fords. We just can't keep printing money. This isn't genius at work. All it is pumping money into the system to keep the big banks afloat.
Again, Russia Today serving up folks from the alternative media. So we always see folks like Webster Tarpley and the aforeheard Wayne Mattson. And there we heard Gerald Celente. Last couple, Obama Sia notes. Obama administration opposes 9/11 health funding. That's from New York Daily News. And Obama will never waver from supporting Israel. That's, of course, from Press TV. But now it's on to Police State International. And the question being asked by deprogram.net, could Vancouver 2010 Olympics be the next 9/11? I can't fully go over this story, but they've been updating it and doing a lot of research, putting together the warning signs. And again, the games are taking place February 12th through the 28th. That's very soon. And there are other war games and drills going on. I don't believe we'll have time to cover the drills going on right now over top the Super Bowl site. But that's coming up next Sunday. But again, drills, military ops. Deprogram goes over missing ammonium nitrate from a local facility. The fact that that local facility got bought up by financial giants Kinder Morgan. The fear-mongering of Al-Qaeda using ammonium nitrate bombs. Afghanistan bans ammonium nitrate fertilizer. Right on cue, right before the State of the Union, Bin Laden shows up. They go on, and to track the agreements between the top two states in the North American Union, basically saying troops can go back and forth. So we will be watching the situation in Vancouver. The mainstream note on this from the Washington Post, Canada, U.S. beef up security for Winter Olympics games in Vancouver. And what do we see? What ties in with so much of this? We'll just go for the local reporting from NJ.com. Somerset, New Jersey man arrested with grenade launcher and weapons cache. Somerset authorities seize grenade launcher and weapons cache from Virginia man at motel. Somerset County investigators seized a cache of weapons, including grenade launcher, hundreds of rounds of ammo, from a Branchburg motel room of a Virginia man who also had maps of a U.S. military facility and an out-of-state civilian community. Lloyd Woodson, 43, whose last known address was Reston, Virginia, faces multiple offenses, including second-degree unlawful weapon possession and fourth-degree possession of prohibited weapons. The update, they're saying he has no connection, no terrorism link. But guys from Spookville, right around D.C., you know, Alexandria, Arlington, Langley, Reston. So this guy comes from there. And again, I'm sure what we'll discover is that there will be intelligence connections. U.S. police arrest heavily armed man with military map. That's from spacewar.com. But, of course, putting it into the proper context, potential false flag attack to be blamed on Muslims foiled. This from Paul Joseph Watson. Potential false flag terror attack to be blamed on Muslims has been foiled after a Navy vet. Oh, well, there we go. Busted with all those weapons I mentioned time and time again. Again, I'm sure we'll see very soon all the connections spill out, but those will be unprinted or underprinted and underreported. But on around the Police State International, you can watch a video, thanks to Raw Story, of New York City cops punching a handcuffed man in the head. Or, how about this? Let's hop down to Texas and check out the school kids that are being tracked with GPS.
Imagine your child having to carry a GPS tracking device because they have a problem staying in school. But as Raquel Duncan tells us, it sounds kind of extreme, but that may happen to some students in Port Arthur. Raquel?
Shelter students who come to Justice of the Peace Tom Gillum's truancy courts may find themselves enrolled in a program which just kicked off today. It's called AIM, also known as the Attendance Improvement Management Program. Now, students enrolled in AIM will be required to keep this handheld device on them for 6 weeks. It will track them from the time they go to school in the morning to the time they check in for curfew at night. A trained mentor will also coach students over the phone. Judge Gillum hopes the program will encourage students to stay in school.
Get something behind your name that you could stand tall, that you could teach others. Don't make the mistakes that I made. And if you do, you can turn it around and correct it before it's too late.
Tune in tonight on Fox 4 First at 9. Find out what these students will face if they don't comply with the program. Sheldra?
All right, thanks, Raquel. We'll see how that works.
Yeah, we'll see if you comply. Flight diverted to Denver's New World Airport, also known as Denver International Airport. Of course, the one with the strange murals and rumored underground military bases and strange occult evil-looking statues of blue horses outside that killed the creator of it. That's from the Washington Post. Authorities quietly reverse underwear bomber official story. This is key, because this surrounds all the TSA terror that we're seeing and all the mass murder contagion going on. Again, from Paul Joseph Watson. Authorities have quietly reversed the official story behind the Christmas Day underwear bomber attack and acknowledged that an accomplice was involved, despite weeks of denial and derision of eyewitnesses, or of eyewitness Kurt Haskell's description of a sharp-dressed man who helped Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab board Flight 253 in Amsterdam, buried in the last two paragraphs of a story about alleged female suicide bombers coming from Yemen. An ABC News report contains the following bombshell, quote, federal agents also tell ABCNews.com they are attempting to identify a man who passengers said helped Abdulmutallab change planes for Detroit when he landed in Amsterdam from Lagos, Nigeria. Authorities had initially discounted the passenger accounts, but the agents say there is a growing belief the man have played a role to make sure Abdulmutallab did not get cold feet. A handler. Intelligence connections. So speaking of that, you can read about John Poindexter over on Danger Room. Spam, Takiza, and total information awareness. But that's just a sidebar to the TSA paranoia. Full body scanner, blind to bomb parts. That's from the register.co.uk, pointing out the invasion of the body scanners, the scanner scam. They don't even work. Just like they take your liquids, but they dump them all in a big bucket together. Oregon shoppers and cops freak out over a man carrying an umbrella. Everyone is a suspect. You are a terrorist until proven a civilian. The last note on Police State International by way of raw story, Bush order allowing murder of U.S. citizens abroad still in effect. Of course it is. It's all still in effect. It's only just been codified and furthered with more executive orders. But this comes from the CIA's favorite newspaper, the Washington Post. CIA authority to kill U.S. citizens abroad if strong evidence existed that an American was involved in carrying or organizing terror actions against the U.S. or U.S. interests, which, you know, that could be anything. So speaking of the war horrors, it gets even uglier. And again, from Raw Story, Pentagon calls for Office of Strategic Deception. It's just completely in your face now. You can also even download that white paper they don't think you'll read. Defense Science Board 2008 Summer Study on Capability Surprise. And again, that link, you can download the nearly 8 meg PDF for you. I got it for you. Paging James Cameron, Pentagon wants 3D surveillance. Pentagon master plan, supersize my drone fleet. And what does this all lead us to? from antiwar.com. Price of U.S. wars, $1 trillion and rising, and I think that's probably lowball. Former Army top brass addresses Gitmo, Obama, and more. That's from Alex Constantine. Which I should, now that we've mentioned Alex Constantine, and again, the interview I did with him last year. He has a new website collecting all of his massive archives. TheWorldIsMyCountry.org. U.S. moves missiles and troops to Russian border. That's an exclusive piece from BlacklistedNews.com. It's a slippery slope. When the trigger fingers start to get itchy, that's when you have things like Gulf of Tonkin incidents. Or that speedboat incident. You are going to explode. Pentagon backtracks after Gates admits Blackwater, or Z, is operating in Pakistan. Missile shooting ships on station in the Persian Gulf. Chemical Ali, the vaunted Saddam Hussein aide, has been executed in Iraq. More on that from the New York Times. And the interesting note from allgov.com as well as legitgov.org, U.S. to pay Taliban fighters to lay down their arms. Or is it cheaper and more effective to buy off the Taliban than to fight them? We bought them off in the first place, even if you buy the official story of 9/11 and the War of Terror. We funded and trained these guys against the Soviets. And even Brzezinski admits we were doing things in Afghanistan to draw the Soviets in the first place. So there's no limited hangout there. So, this is somewhat moot. We need to keep the drugs rolling. That's a huge part of it, you know. And the last note here, no offense meant on the War Horse headlines. We've reported this before, but here it is again. As startling and disturbing as the amounts of military suicides, this from newsjunkiepost.com, a third of women in the U.S. military raped. Think about that. All right, we're down to about the last half hour of episode 155 of MediaMonarchy.com. As I catch my breath. And you got to know, I believe, Media Monarchy gives you more just straight up news than any other podcast or radio show I know about. There I am, patting my own horn. Let's move to all the latest updates and lowdowns on the BioWars and EnviroHealth. CFL, WV, HIV, H1N1, and WMD. Unfortunately, the question, is it time to bring back the Civilian Conservation Corps? That's being asked by allgov.com, harking back to the WPA and FDR, and actually putting people to work, which, again, if there's a war effort, there was some kind of motivation to help out. Now they just want you to buy slave goods at Walmart. But we've already said they're going to bring on the green shirts. We've talked about it. We've exposed it. We've looked at the groups. We've looked at calls for national service by Rahm Emanuel. And we've said time and time again, citing Soylent Green, that in a future that's been collapsed, the only jobs you'll get will be working for the state, being a corrupt snitch, and you'll be slightly better than all the useless eaters laying around on the streets. So call them Civilian Conservation Corps or Green Shirts or whatever. Let's keep moving. naturalnews.com goes into the CFLs. That's compact fluorescent lights dumping mercury directly into landfills. Compact fluorescent light bulbs have become all the rage over the past several years, touted by many as the preferable green way to light a home, save energy, and promote environmental responsibility. While they may use less energy than traditional incandescent bulbs, CFL bulbs are filled with toxic mercury that, when disposed of, contaminates landfills and the environment. A report released in 2008 from the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, with a link to that report and I believe even some more recent reports, within there, it reveals that when a CFL bulb is broken, it can release dangerously high levels of mercury into the air. I believe also provided in that link is, of course, all the things that say what to do if you break one. It's pretty much a hazmat situation. So, speaking of a hazmat situation from the Washington Post, not the Onion, officials fear toxic ingredient in Botox could become a terrorist tool. So maybe all that Botox in CFR, UN, Stooge, Angelina Jolie, maybe that really is a terrorist tool. Seriously, though, from The Guardian, and it's always interesting to go across the pond to get news stories about my home state. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. versus Don Blankenship. The debate on mountaintop mining live before a West Virginia audience.
From coal to climate change, a high-level debate last night had Don Blankenship, CEO of Massey Energy, sparring with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., environmental activist at the University of Charleston, West Virginia. Amid sharp clashes over the future of coal mining and mountaintop removal, there was some common ground. Clean Skies' Dan Goldstein was there.
At last night's debate, there were smiles. Some forced, some not. Both men came with sound bites.
These companies are liquidating the state for cash using these giant machines and 2,500 tons of ammonium nitrate explosives they detonate every year, every day. In the state of West Virginia, it's the equivalent of a Hiroshima bomb once a week.
The fact of the matter is there's hundreds of millions of dollars of payroll paid to people in this state, hundreds of millions of dollars of severance taxes, and that the state greatly benefits from the production of coal, not just people out of state.
Statistics. The coal industry brings $8 billion a year to Central Appalachia, but the cost, the health care costs, are $40 billion a year.
99% of the electricity in this state comes from mining coal. The environmental stewardship in the state of the mining is second to none in the world.
Claims and counterclaims over the biggest controversy. Mountaintop removal mining.
We're here to talk about a very destructive kind of mining that actually hurts job production in this state. A mountaintop removal mine uses about between 24 and 32% less, fewer miners to produce a ton of coal. So if we went back to underground mining, we could produce the same amount of coal, but we'd use more human beings, and more of that money would be left in the state of West Virginia.
To force the coal business out of West Virginia or surface mining would be a huge mistake for household budgets. It'd be a huge mistake for the industry in this country. It'd be a huge mistake for our homeland security.
Both sides packed Geary Auditorium on campus, place where Robert Kennedy's uncle Jack once stood during his run for the presidency, 1960. Back then, nearly 150,000 men worked the mines. Today, more efficient equipment, some say mountaintop removal, have whittled that number down to just 20,000. The crowd filled the auditorium, so they had to make room for dozens more in this gym. Here, miners from Massey had their bosses back. Kennedy didn't appear to change many minds. But Blankenship and Kennedy did find some common ground. China, they said, would take the lead in production of alternative energy, like wind turbines.
So, the interesting connections of JFK and West Virginia, notwithstanding. And also, if you caught the reference to ammonium nitrate, which we just referenced going missing from a bankster company near the upcoming Olympics in Vancouver. Aside from all that, we've covered RFK Jr. speaking out for West Virginia against mountaintop removal mining. I believe I mentioned to you last week Don Blankenship of Massey Energy being featured in that recent Rolling Stone issue, You Idiots, and his pull quote that got the most attention, Don Blankenship, the miner. It's a bunch of rhetoric and untruths. This industry is what made this country great. If we forget that, we're going to have to learn to speak Chinese. Further down the list of BioWars and Enviro Health updates, House of Numbers, an AIDS HIV documentary, has opened in Portland, Oregon. I believe it had a one-week run, and it may actually be done by the time I'm telling you this right now. And it opened amid bad local press from Willamette Week as well as the Oregonian, saying the film blurs facts. Ukrainian black lung death toll is now over 1,000, and 250,000 people have been hospitalized. We went over this several months ago with the strange Ukraine situation and the swine flu mutations. This from Business Insider. The mutated version of the H1N1 swine flu is truly wrecking havoc throughout Eastern Europe, with the Ukrainian death toll now clocking in at 1,005. That going to beforeitsnews.com, and we note that that number is set to rise. Another think tank white paper, preventwmd.gov, U.S. unprepared for major bioterror attack, a commission finds. More on that from the Washington Post. And you can download and read the Prevention of WMD Proliferation and Terrorism report card. But the last Enviro Health note goes to my man James Corbett and his new site, climategate.tv. Information commissioner says ClimateGate scientist broke the law. The scientific unit at the heart of the climate change email scandal broke the law by hiding data from skeptics. Researchers at the University of East Anglia breached the Freedom of Information Act by refusing to comply with requests for the data. The decision by the Information Commissioner's Office comes months after controversial emails from the university's climate research unit, a global leader in its field, were released to the internet. Flashback to November of 2009 on MediaMonarchy.com. So again, great new work from James Corbett. Again, that's climategate.tv. Hopefully we're going to have time to get to some of the other related alternative media and some of my sister sites, but we've got to go over this by way of USA Today and all around the world. And again, it's too big to ignore. Not sure if there's anything to it. It could just be another case of fake left-right shenanigans. Four charged in phone scheme at Louisiana Senator Landrieu's office. Four men accused of trying to tamper with Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu's office phones share a common experience as young ideologues writing for conservative publications.
Conservative activist James O'Keefe first stirred the political pot last September, posing as a pimp in these undercover videos of the liberal community organizing group ACORN. Now, prosecutors accuse O'Keefe and three others of targeting the New Orleans office of Louisiana Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu. Prosecutors say two of the men entered the New Orleans Federal Building dressed in jeans, tool belts, and hard hats. And as they pretended to work on the senator's phones, O'Keefe recorded the action on his cell phone. The three and a fourth man accused of helping in the planning have now all been charged with maliciously interfering with a telephone system operated and controlled by the United States of America.
It's not clear what the men were trying to do, but prosecutors are not willing to dismiss their actions as just political hijinks. If convicted, each of the four could face up to 10 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. Bob Orr, CBS News, Washington.
So I've included a lot of links in here for you to read of this whole circus sideshow. And we've got things all around USA Today and Newsbusters and The Telegraph and more on ACORN and some of the other guys. But their connections, again, we said that they were guys who wrote for conservative publications. But there's also, get this, O'Keefe and one of the other guys, Joseph Basil, as well as Stan Dye, D-A-I, and Robert Flanagan. Those are the four guys. So these guys have connections to once directing a program aimed at getting college students interested in the intelligence field after 9/11. being connected to the Pelican Institute, being the son of a acting U.S. attorney for Northern Louisiana. So basically, it's not yet clear whether the plan was a prank intended to be captured on camera or a more serious attempt at political espionage, as being claimed by state Dems who have dubbed it Louisiana Watergate. You can download and read the full affidavit and get more on the four charged in the phone scheme. A quick note I want to mention. Mark Burrier, an amazing illustrator and designer that I know from back east, he's got a new website called rarewords.org. As he describes it, a collaborative blog where you submit words or a phrase that become the creative starting point for drawings. So, I, of course, submitted Media Monarchy for possible illustration, and a few months later, he did it. It's awesome. I posted it up. You basically put in some words or phrases, and he'll create a drawing for it. So, there's a awesome Media Monarchy illustration that basically has lots of high-rise buildings all kind of crunched together, and they all have satellites on all their corners, and they're beaming out waves. So, thanks to Mark Burrier. So, again, rarewords.org. And Mark Burrier, he's been featured in print magazine and a lot of great places. So, we're throwing props to my friends and folks in the alternative media world. So let's mention here a little further the latest episode of The New World Next Week, my video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. The January 28th episode is up and out there. Lots of great comments. I really appreciate the views. I love promoting just a little 10-minute bite-sized video that breaks it down. We provide the links for you. We go over the Davos security head found dead the day before the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. The Pentagon wanting digital DNA to identify hackers. We may get to that in a moment. That, of course, ties in with Richard Clark and the I-9/11 and the I-Patriot Act that's waiting for some catastrophic catalyzing event. Cyber Genome Project and conferences in New York. And again, I didn't call it a cyberspace war for nothing. And the third story from foodworldorder.com, a quarter of U.S. grain crops fed to cars, not people. So again, my friends, if you subscribe to feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy, put it into iTunes, you'll get the Media Monarchy podcast as well as the New World Next Week videos, iPod ready, share them, stream them, copy them, help us. So the other thing related to Corbett Report, his latest episode from last Sunday, episode 114, Newspeak is double plus ungood. The war on consciousness continues, and that's essentially what all of this is. The war on consciousness continues in the battlefield of the mind. Words are our weapons, and we're being disarmed. Fight back by equipping yourself with the info warrior's best friend. That would be a vocabulary, my friends. James Corbett's on fire. He also has a bunch of audio interviews as well. Interviews with Greg Nicoletos, the aforementioned F. William Ingdahl, Kevin Annett, Chris Geo, socio student Dave Darby, Neil Foster. All wide-ranging, fascinating interviews that are available. And what that ties into, the next thing we're going to mention is the latest episode of the Peace Revolution podcast, peacerevolution.org. Their second episode is up, and it's The Million Dollar Education. It's basically, I haven't even wrapped my brain around it, and I can't even kind of fully explicate it. The work that Richard Grove and Lisa Arbacek-Chesky and Jan Ervin and Paul Verge and all those guys are doing at peacerevolution.org is really about education. And they go into the works of John Taylor Gatto, and they talk about something known as the trivium and the quadrivium. It may seem to be heady topics, but again, they're fascinating, and that's why I can't even fully explain it. I've got some homework to do, because I'll make a brief mention, and I shouldn't do this because it hasn't happened yet, but myself, James Corbett, and Richard Grove of peacerevolution.org are going to be having a conversation tomorrow And I believe that's going to be for inclusion on upcoming Corbett Report episode 115, coming up in just a couple of days as I speak to you now on January 29th. The alternative to the alternative media. So that's all I'm going to say. And again, just huge thanks to not only Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org, but Richard Grove, peacerevolution.org, James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, and all of you guys out there who make contact, get in touch with me on Facebook or MySpace or Twitter or YouTube, send me news links. Folks have sent me donations, books, CDs. I love it. I love sharing things with you guys. Somebody asked me about making bumper stickers the other day. If somebody wants to do that, I would love it. Just take the masthead and slap it on a bumper sticker. MediaMonarchy.com with the stars. Blam. That's all you need. I can't do it all, unfortunately. And there's a lot of other things I'd like to do, but I'm not sure the space-time continuum will allow it. So having said all that, let's take our remaining time to blast through all the latest on my two sister sites, cyberspacewar.com. But first, let's run down foodworldorder.com, posted up under the headline of Food Safety News, reports, records, and even more recalls. We call this Food Safety News because basically all of these stories, all of these links come from foodsafetynews.com. I've mentioned some of the newer sites I've been really enjoying, and it's, again, things like this within the alternative media that you see, and it's not a jealousy thing, it's not a competition thing, but you see other effective work being done in the information war, and I love it. AllGov.com, RedactedNews.blogspot.com, Food Safety News. So let's run down these reports, records, and even more recalls. BPI sues to keep their ammonia beef records private. And, of course, that's a flashback to something we covered just a couple of weeks ago, BPI being Beef Products Incorporated injects your meat with ammonia. They're suing to keep their dirty records private. Mainstream media focuses on food safety, getting a little more attention. Chicken pot pies recalled. Oregon hazelnut recall makes FDA report. 38-state salmonella outbreak. Pepper suspected and has been confirmed in salmonella outbreak. Water distributors in West Virginia and Rhode Island get FDA warnings. USDA to lift 21-year ban on haggis. And lastly, Wellux Made in China noodles recalled. But that's not all, folks. From naturalnews.com, food industry continues to market junk food to children. Study conducted by Children Now, California-based child advocacy group, childrennow.org. A study conducted by Children Now has been released that indicts the food industry for continuing to market unhealthy food to children. And again, as I try and do for you, if we're talking about, you know, research says or a new report released says, I do the extra legwork to give you that PDF if available, give you the link, give you the sources. So again, not making it up. The impact of industry self-regulation on the nutritional quality of foods advertised on television to children. You can download that whole PDF from childrennow.org. The last note on Food World Order is the one I said we mentioned as a third story on the latest New World next week. One quarter of U.S. grain crops fed to cars, not people. One quarter of all the maize and other grain crops grown in the U.S. now ends up as biofuel in cars rather than being used to feed people. This according to new analysis, which suggests that the biofuel revolution launched by former puppet George Bush in 2007 is impacting world food supplies. 2009 figures from the USDA shows ethanol production rising to record levels driven by farm subsidies and laws which require vehicles to use increasing amounts of biofuels. The grain grown to produce fuel in the U.S. in 2009 was enough to feed 330 million people for 1 year at average world consumption levels. Thus saith Lester Brown, director of the Earth Policy Institute, a Washington think tank that conducted the analysis. So again, think tanks, and sometimes white papers written by white people, we provide the links for you. The contextual supplemental information to do the research for yourself, earth-policy.org. You can read that report. And again, this story comes by way of The Guardian. 1/4 of U.S. grain crops fed to cars, not people. We now move to cyberspacewar.com. For another story that we covered on the latest New World Next Week, of course from Danger Room, Pentagon searches for digital DNA to identify hackers. One of the trickiest problems in cybersecurity is trying to figure out who's really behind an attack. DARPA, the mad scientist wing from the Pentagon, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, you know, they created the interwebs. They're trying to fix that problem of not knowing who's behind an attack with the cyber equivalent of fingerprints or DNA. In other words, by way of the register.co.uk, any code you write, perhaps even any document you create, might one day be traceable back to you, just as your DNA could be found if at a crime scene, and just as it is used to be possible, or just as it used to be possible to identify radio operators even on encrypted channels by the distinctive fist with which they operated their Morse keys, or something like that, anyway. And wouldn't you know it, the Cyber Genome Project with all the spooks and DARPA and DNA are having a little conference this week in Virginia. From cleantechnica.com, this was moments before they released the fantastic new iPad that the world goes crazy for, another gadget. Tools without ideas. Apple files patent for solar-powered iPods. We've got the schematics, we've got the links, we've got the patent numbers, it's all there, and it's quite fascinating, and it unfortunately makes me think of some future where on the smart grid, when sometimes power isn't working well and there's rolling blackouts and things, you're going to need a solar-powered iPod. The last bit from Cyberspace War is an ugly list of headlines. DEFCON 128, real-time tracking, CIA connections, and more. Newsflash. There are defects in the e-passports that allow real-time tracking. I don't believe it's a defect. They've implanted new passports with RFID chips. They're meant to be tracked. So it's not a defect to show that they're tracking you. But again, more on that from the Register. China to U.S., shut up about so-called internet freedom. Google's China hypocrisy ignores deep CIA connections. That's, of course, from Alex Constantine. Google toolbar caught tracking users when disabled. Constantine again goes into Oracle software in the CIA. We note that 80% of federal sites miss the DNS security deadline. PayPal has frozen the WikiLeaks.org account. Computers were down at 168 California DMV offices. That would be every California DMV office. A second man admits the distributed denial of service attack on Scientology. Internet generation at risk of rickets. That's right. And one of the last notes, hopping over again to Spooktown, Virginia, and I believe we noted not too long ago that as all these strange sky events were happening, that they were even going to classify things, any kind of Earth-space strike event. But it's a little sky surprise. Meteorite hits doctor's office in Virginia.
A visitor from above, way above. A meteorite crashes through the ceiling of this clinic in Morton, Virginia.
Apparently my days are not up yet. I have a few more days to go.
Physician Mark Galini was supposed to be in the exam room with a patient, but there was a last-minute cancellation. Folks here say the half-pound meteorite coming through the ceiling sounded like an explosion.
It was a scary event, yeah, for sure.
It was magnetic. It had a charred surface to it. And it was fairly heavy.
The meteorite broke into three pieces. Now it's headed to the Smithsonian Institution.
Well, of course it's exciting. It's the first meteorite that's fallen in Virginia since 1924. And it's always nice to have a newly fallen meteorite to look at and study.
As for the clinic, it just wants to fix the roof over its head, damaged by a visitor from outer space. Lee Powell, The Associated Press.
Cyberspace war, indeed. We want to make a quick mention of another strange occurrence in the Norwegian sky. Was mysterious jellyfish in sky caused by space satellite. We'll have to save that for another time, because now we have to quickly mention some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Boy, they're piling up. from the New York State Department of Transportation to the Jacksonville Police Department, Drug Enforcement Agency, Omaha World Herald, Fort Hood out of Texas. They Googled YouTube, Angel Thunder. Spooktown out of Herndon, again, .army.mil out of Beasley, Texas. Paramount Pictures, they were reading about Pentagon Seeks Fleet of Massive DARPA Spy Blimps. We had Northrop Grumman out of Bethpage, New York. We had the Army Recreation Machine out of Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland. They Googled Webster Tarpley Illustration of Rogue Networks. And lastly, from Fort Meade, the DoD Network Information Center, they were reading a couple years back under the previous puppet administration about a massive attack simulation to involve every state. And it does involve every state, my friends. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and shows, MediaMonarchy.com, The New World Next Week, CyberspaceWar.com, FoodWorldOrder.com. This has been episode 155 of MediaMonarchy.com, January 29th, 2010. And as always, imploring you, my friends, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.